Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, and we are back talking Tom Thibodeau, Coach of the Year, Alex. Last episode, we went over everything that went spectacularly well for Tibbs. This episode, we definitely do some of that. We talk about just how much credit he deserves for the leaps made by guys like Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, Reggie Bullock, and a whole host of other Knicks. But we get into a couple of critiques.
Yeah, and the critiques, I mean, there's not a ton. Obviously, he won Coach of the Year. He turned things around in New York. But there are some things that we think that he needs to work on for next year, including experimenting more, not sticking with certain Elfrid Payton-type players anymore, and things of that nature. So we'll get into all that next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes!
Up, puck left. Now fires it.
He's good. And he's fouled. He's done.
And he Anthony for three.
You are Locked On Knicks, and today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game, and only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. I'm Gavin Shaw, a resumed play-by-play broadcaster. He's Alex Wolf, editor-in-chief of the Strickland, and we're about to talk Tibbs. Alex, to open this episode, I want to touch on how much credit he deserves relative to some of the assistant coaches on the roster, particularly Kenny Payne and Johnny Bryant, for the development and turnaround of some of the older players and the leaps made throughout the year of some of the younger guys. So let's get into that.
I think, well, it kind of gets into what I was just talking about with Randall, where I don't think you can give him any credit for Randall just making the decision to change his body and relentlessly drill his jump shot to the point that he made one of the biggest single-season jumps in three-point shooting in NBA history. That's not really about Tibbs, but you can give Tibbs all the credit in the world for recognizing very quickly, and there are a lot of coaches, who wouldn't have recognized that Randall was a different guy this year, and the player that was an utter disaster a season ago was gone, and Tibbs very, very quickly picked up on, like, you could tell, like, a lot of people will come into a new job and say, hey, it's a clean slate, and it's like, all right, and everyone's like, is it really a clean slate, because you seem to be judging me based on what happened in the past. It was genuinely a clean slate with Julius Randle, and Tibbs said, hey, this guy is clearly our best player, let's put the ball in his hands, let's tell him where everyone's going to be on the court, and let's make sure that's drilled into guys, hey, Reggie, when Julius drives middle, you're going to be right here on the left wing so he can spin around in midair and blindly throw a pass, and he knows that you're going to be right there and you can drain a three. A play that we saw happen time after time after time this year, and to those guys' credit, everyone bought in and it worked, and I think that's on Tibbs. So for Reggie, for Julius, you got to give him all the credit in the world. And then even for Derrick Rose, I mean, he clearly, and Taj Gibson, he clearly had such a trust and knowledge of how to best utilize those guys. And at a relatively advanced age for D. Rose, even more so for Gibson, he got the best out of them. And I think that deserves a lot of high marks. Now, for the younger players, you could make an argument that it was more so on the developmental staff for RJ. I mean, I would honestly give most of the credit, again, without knowing the inner workings of things, to Drew Hanlon, like who we worked with all offseason, because it seems like even going back to last year, he was ready to be a better three-point shooter, and Fizdale forced a different form on him that he wasn't practicing all offseason, and that sort of resulted in disaster, where he was constantly kind of fluctuating between what he spent working on all summer and what he was told to do now, and he shot horribly because of it. And this year, I mean, if you want to give Tibbs credit, it's that he didn't screw that up and said, yeah, Hanlon did good work with you in the offseason, just kind of follow that, and it led to RJ over the second half of the year being one of the best spot-up shooters in the entire league. Quickly and Obi, I think, are where you really look at Johnny Bryant and Kenny Payne. Same with Mitch defensively to some extent, and I mean, that gets into a lot of stuff, the scheme, but also like very specific coaching in terms of how he could limit his fouls and his general basketball IQ skyrocketing this season. That's where I kind of go like, all right, Kenny Payne clearly has something to do with that. And just the jump Obi Toppin made from the beginning of the season to the end, where at the start of the year, I mean, I know I publicly apologize for it, but I'll stand by to some extent my critiques were offensively, he was a disaster. He just was not an NBA player. He was good in transition and he was good at passing. And that was about it. Was scared to shoot the ball, had some of the worst missed threes I've ever seen in my life. Couldn't really get all the way to the basket. And then by the end of the year, he's running these like gorgeous, like fake dribble handoffs. He's putting moves on Danilo Gallinari. He's hitting floaters in Clint Capella's face. It was a really, really significant jump, especially for a relatively older player. And even IQ, I wouldn't really say IQ was better at the end of the year than he was at the beginning. In some ways, he was, I think the league hadn't quite caught up to him at the beginning of the year, and he had a bit more energy. And yet, by the end of the year, he was pretty consistently getting all the way to the rim, where earlier in the season, it became a running joke that this guy could only take a floater. And I think for that transition, and obviously there's still a lot of room to grow there, I think you have to look a little bit more towards the assistant coaches, Alex.
All right, let's take a quick break. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spent account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily instant karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your instant karma cash will be added to your spend account. Credit Karma has already given away over $3 million in instant karma to over 50,000 credit card members and counting. Open your FDIC-issued spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. Only for June 8th through June 30th, and when you make a purchase on those dates, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Credit Karma Money, progress starts here. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank, Inc. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply.
And today's show is also brought to you by RockAuto.com. You know, one reason that you repair and maintain your car yourself is to save money that you can use for other things in your life, like the mortgage or food or rent, whatever the case may be. You know, there's more important things to be spending your money on than you know, mechanics bills and things of that nature. And that's why you try to repair your car yourself. And let's say you would go to an Advanced Auto Parts and try to get a fuel pump assembly for the family minivan, your 05 to 2010 Honda Odyssey. That's going to run you $354 at Advance, compared to just $216.79 at rockauto.com. That $140 roughly that you're saving there could be a whole grocery order. I mean, think about that just for the difference of what it costs at one of these brick and mortar auto parts stores compared to rockauto.com. So if you want to check out what's available for your car or truck now, go to rockauto.com and see. And if you decide to pick something up, right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
But I'll fire that question back at you. Where do you attribute credit to Tibbs, and where do you attribute credit to the Johnny Bryants and the Kenny Paynes of the world?
Yeah, I think I'm largely in agreement. You know, I think that with Randall, you know, so much of that was his offseason work. I mean, I think nobody from the Knicks would ever say it like publicly and loudly publicly, but I think you could sort of read through the reporting around the team this year, through some of the comments made, that nobody really saw this coming from Julius Randle. Nobody saw him being this much better than last year and coming into camp like that motivated and in that good of shape and having shot that many jumpers over the summer kind of thing. And, you know, there's obviously the, you know, Tibbs had said that, you know, he told Julius, like, show up ready to play, you know, show up in the best shape of your life, blah, blah, blah. But he told that to everybody. You know, obviously that's what the new coach is going to say to his highest dollar player is, hey, show up ready to play, with the implication being if you don't, you're gone. You know, this is a new era, you know, so figure it out or we're going to ship you off for whatever we can get for you. And I would assume that probably all the way back at the mini camps that they did back in like September, when the COVID restrictions, the COVID restrictions didn't get eased, but they allowed teams to have these mini camps where they could bring in their current roster from last year and have them do like some work together just so that the coaches could get an idea of where they were at and all that stuff. I would assume that when Tibbs saw Randall at that, he probably had at least some idea of, okay, this guy seems better than he was previously. And, you know, I would think that a guy like Kenny Payne probably could have relayed that to him as well. So I think that Randall's huge turnaround is mostly on Randall. RJ's turnaround to a degree, I think, is on RJ, but I also think that Tibbs did a great job of setting him up in sets that made him comfortable this year. I mean, you look at so often, you know, even with a player as good as Randall at the, you know, the top of the pecking order, the Knicks would start off a lot of games with, you know, actions for like RJ and Mitch and try to get them going because they understood, you know, these are the younger players. They need a little more to, you know, get them going. You know, they need these confidence boosts at the beginning of games. And he would get RJ going with just some quick like pick and rolls and dribble handoffs and that sort of thing, get him rolling. And then those are some of the games that RJ tended to do the best, was when he started off strong. Then he was able to just kind of keep that energy going throughout the whole game. Now, some games he would start off poorly and then he would be good in the second half. But I think that was also, you know, they would usually put RJ in better situations to succeed in the second half and he would take advantage and succeed. So, you know, again, it's like, where do you put the credit? I don't know if you can give 100% of credit for RJ to Tibbs, but you can certainly give some of it to him. And I'm sure that Johnny Bryant did a lot of great work with him as well, particularly on his like inside finishing and foul drawing and that sort of stuff, more so than the shot, which, again, you said, you know, Drew Hanlon, his trainer, did a good job of, you know, getting his shot unbroken from last year from the Fizdale, Keith Smart, whatever crap that went on. Then as far as other guys on the team, I mean, I think Mitch showed a big leap this year as far as not fouling and being a smarter defensive player. And I would be willing to bet that that came from Tibbs in many ways. It probably also came from Kenny Payne in some ways. It's like there's some credit here, some credit there, but the situations that Mitch was put in game and the schemes and everything were pretty great for his skill set. And I think put him in a position to succeed. I think the guys that, and I mean, you sort of alluded to this, the guys that you can really give Tibbs credit for would be the guys that you already knew what they were. But then they came in and had career years this year. Reggie Bullock, you know, shooting a career, not a career high, but his highest mark in like 3-4 seasons, 41% from three, which was the third highest 3-point percentage of his career. Getting big minutes, you know, defending the other team's best player, being put in situations to, other than the playoffs, obviously, again, to take advantage of his core strengths of, you know, just catching and shooting, basically, you know, and he found so many good ways to get him open with Julius Randle as the ball handler, which was like probably the most deadly combination on the team throughout the year. And then, you know, guys like Rose and Taj, you know, just milking whatever they had left in them out this season. Noel turning him into the stopper that he was. I mean, Noel's always kind of been a blocks and steals sort of guy. I went over that in the last segment quite a bit, so I won't do it too much, but I thought that Noel probably had the best year of his career, and I still wouldn't necessarily buy into him long-term as a starting center, but you know, he certainly is a fantastic defensive player, and Tibbs made him look better in many ways, I think, by setting up good schemes to funnel guys right to Noel and let him do what he does best. Then the rookies, I am in total agreement too. I think that we saw a lot more patience out of Tibbs this year, and he even had patience with Obi throughout the year. You know, the fact that Obi was getting any minutes at all at a certain point around the middle of the season was a testament to Tibbs' patience, because Obi was pretty much unplayable for a good stretch in the middle of the season there, where he just was really having a hard time figuring things out. He could not shoot the ball for anything. He was not finishing. He was not putting the ball on the floor great. He was miscommunicating on defense, but Tibbs still gave him those reps and still put him in there for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes per game. You know, he would let him at least get a little bit of NBA action. Of course, the benefits of that was getting Julius Randle his small amount of rest per game, but he still did give minutes to Obi, even if he was more or less the only option there. And Obi, you know, showed great improvement by the end of the year and finally started to look like an NBA player. And Tibbs rewarded him with more minutes, even in the playoffs, when, you know, you would have thought that Julius Randle was going to be playing 48 minutes per game. You know, he was giving Obi like solid, you know, 16, 17, 18 minute stints in the playoffs because he had earned it. So there's that. There's Quickly, you know, again, to your point, there were some skill developments. I don't know how much of the individual skill developments that I think I would, you know, tab up to Tibbs there, but the fact that he gave Quickly a chance all year to contribute was really big. And he let Quickly contribute from like day one, you know, and he was also good about pulling him if he was playing particularly bad, but by and large, letting him shoot, letting him try to get in a rhythm, because he knew that, you know, this kid is really good. And if he gets in a rhythm, it's all over for the other team. Like, we're definitely, you know, we're going to be in good shape if Quickly can catch fire. So yeah, that's basically how I feel about that. As far as what he has to work on for next year, there's obviously a lot, you know, even for as great as this year was, there were a lot of nits we had to pick this year. The biggest one, I think, is the Elfrid Payton thing. So I'll call dibs on that one before I send it to you, Gavin. But, you know, Elfrid Payton was bad. He was very bad this year. He didn't look like an NBA player for a large number of his minutes, particularly towards the end of the season, where he just continued to start and start and start. And then you hit a situation in the playoffs where Tibbs had been so stubborn about starting Elfrid Payton that Elf started stinking it up in the playoffs. And then you look at the rotation, you say, all right, well, we got to sit him. But then Tibbs didn't really know how to manage the rotation after that because he didn't spend any time during the regular season experimenting. And I guess maybe that's the big takeaway is I think that going into next year, he has to be hopefully the team will get a talent infusion, which then gives you a little bit greater of a margin for error. Like, there were so many times this year where we saw if he would take out the starters with a 10-point lead in the fourth, sometimes they would start coughing that up and he'd have to put the starters back in just to secure that win. I kind of hope that next year, maybe he doesn't put so much importance on every regular season win and is okay with just trying some things out, even if it means an occasional loss here and there. Because ultimately, I think we saw this year, it didn't really make a difference whether the Knicks got the 4 seed or they got the 6 seed. You know, they were probably going to lose in the first round no matter what. They just got outclassed by the Hawks, who were clearly a team that was built more for competing right now. It would have gotten run off the floor by the Bucks most likely, but maybe would have had the same scrappy sort of series where they would have taken like one game off of them. But it would have felt a little more acceptable at least to get completely blown out by the Bucks rather than the Hawks. But either way, you know, or even if they ended up the 7 or 8 seed, you know, and they were up against the Sixers and the Nets, just took like one game off of them and whatever, that would have been a significant building block for this year. But maybe they would have learned some more things about some of the players on the team if they had gotten a few less regular season wins and it instead focused on figuring out some of these combinations for now and for the future, like things that I would look at for next year. Playing Julius Randle and Obi Toppin together, I think, is something that you need to look at starting next year. And maybe it won't be pretty at first. It certainly wasn't pretty early in this year, but that was before Obi sort of figured himself out. You know, it might not be pretty at first, but you got to try it. And you got to be prepared to potentially throw that out there at some point, because that's a lineup that gives you shooting all the way up and down the lineup, which is something that the Knicks desperately needed at times this year. You also have, you don't want to start a guy like Elfrid Payton the entire season, who obviously has no future with the team and wasn't even really offering anything on the floor. Like, if the Knicks could have tried out, okay, let's try Derrick Rose starting. Let's try Emmanuel Quickly starting with Rose coming off the bench. Let's try Frank Ntilikina starting with Rose and Quickly coming off the bench, because they've been a great combo. You know, there were all these different combos that the Knicks could have tried leading up to the postseason, but they didn't. And then it just came back and bit them later on. And so I would just want him to try these things. And then I do get the impression that Tibbs was a little more cognizant of things like lineup data and stuff like that, you know, keeping on top of what combinations are playing well together. I would just want him to stay on top of those as much as possible while he's doing this experimenting. So then he can come at it with a mindset of, okay, being the, like, whatever, like 30, 40 year basketball pro that I am, obviously I know what my eyes tell me, but then, you know, what does the data tell me that maybe my eyes aren't seeing as far as these lineup combinations, where five man lineup, sure, you can see how they work all day, but when you're experimenting with these, you know, staggering bench guys in and whatever, sometimes it's a little harder to contextualize, you know, what players are playing best together, you know, from a numbers perspective. And that's where, like, the three man lineup data stuff comes in. Like, oh, when these three players are on the court, no matter who else is out there with them, that's a winning combination. So let's say it's like, you know, maybe it's Burks and Bullock and Quickly or something. I don't know. Like, maybe that's a lineup that didn't get a ton of use this year that Tibbs maybe looks into using next year if all those players are retained, obviously. But I hope that he pays attention to those sort of things and is not afraid to experiment a little bit and maybe do it at the expense of a regular season loss here and there. Obviously, you don't want to do it to the extent that you're actively costing the team games constantly to the point that then, you know, you put yourself in danger of missing the playoffs or something. But to do it and maybe end up this year with 38 wins instead of 41, I would have been fine with that. And I don't think too many people would have taken any exception to that either, because no matter what the result was this year, it was a good result. And honestly, almost by getting the team to the four seed, he almost got the expectations too high to where all of us then were like, well, not all of us, but I mean, a good number of us were then being like, oh, well, you know, they should be able to beat the Hawks. They were the four seed. They were this, they were that. Not realizing that, you know, the postseason is a different animal, and Tibbs had sort of treated every game like the postseason, running everybody, you know, as much as he had to get the win no matter what, even if it meant not trying interesting new looks.
BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC/MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your big chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if you use our promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Gavin, I've talked long enough. I think I've been going for like 10 straight minutes now. What do you think as far as what Tibbs has to work on most next year?
I honestly don't know how much I have to add. I think you summed it up pretty well. I mean, to your point, it's just, it might even be just getting a new voice in there, as we talked about in our locker room episodes, but continuing to be open to new ideas, continuing to be willing to evolve offensively. And I think he can, I mean, to what you said, could take away a little bit from Nick Nurse in that, in just being willing to like rapidly change with new realities. So in the Hawks series, they shielded a second guy over to Julius at all times. Why were they able to do that? Because the Knicks insisted on always having Taj Gibson or Nerlens Noel out there, two centers who don't really do anything other than like catch and finish at this point in their career. I mean, Gibson, like occasional post-ups against a mismatch here or there. How do you get around that? You either have to have better personnel, and then you're kind of shielding Tibbs from himself. And if you have a center in there who can shoot threes, like, I don't know, I'm just throwing out a random name like Christian Wood, Brooke Lopez, someone like that, all of a sudden, those aren't as significant issues, because the defense, just by the skill set of your players, can't really do that. Tibbs doesn't have to be a genius. You can kind of get around that. Or if you're Tibbs, you have to be willing to make an adjustment and say, you know, I typically wouldn't really be comfortable playing Obi Toppin at that spot. I like more rim protection at the center spot. I feel like we need it defensively. And if you want to look for a retroactive justification of Tibbs's decision not to play Obi, I mean, you can see the fire that Atlanta just rained down on Philadelphia, a team with a great defensive center, and it gives you an idea like, all right, if the Knicks did anything different defensively, maybe instead of scoring like, I don't know what the Hawks averaged, like 107, 108 points per game for the series, maybe they would have been getting 120 every game and the Knicks' improvement on offense wouldn't have mattered. The premise is, though, when you're in a series and you get to game four, and it became, I think, pretty readily apparent that if major adjustments weren't made, you just weren't going to have a chance. Instead of being stubborn and saying, screw it, we're going down with what's worked for us all season, you have to, in the moment, have that inherent flexibility to say, all right, I'm willing to scrap everything and try something completely new. And to your point, ideally, you work in enough stuff during the regular season and you rep enough little things. You see with Eric Spoelstra the Heat all the time, where they're mixing in these weird little zones in games where they're up by 30 or maybe even down by 30. But just stuff that could potentially be brought back. And to give Tibbs a little bit of credit, in a pandemic year where they really weren't practicing as much as I think they typically would be, with guys occasionally being in and out of the lineup, with weird schedules, with an abbreviated offseason, all those things were made that much harder. So even though I was a little bit down on him throughout the playoffs, I'm going to try and give him the benefit of the doubt, Elfrid Payton stuff aside, because we all agree that was stupid and inexcusable, that he will be better in that capacity next year. And I think the Knicks front office can make his job easier by giving him more flexible personnel and essentially trying to cater your roster to push Tibbs towards his best tendencies. If you don't have someone like Nerlens Noel or Taj Gibson on the roster, like you don't have a center who's just a one-dimensional offensive option, and granted, the Knicks are probably going to have Mitchell Robinson in that spot, so that'll be true to some extent, but he's so good he can overcome that in other ways. The point is, if you don't have the guy on the roster that Tibbs will always default to playing, he'll be forced to win with something else. So if you're the front office, you kind of have to build the team against Tibbs' worst tendencies, but that will be a theme, Alex, of these conversations that we have all offseason. And on that, I'm kind of content to wrap this up. Shout out to Tibbs for winning Coach of the Year.
Yeah, congratulations, Tom Thibodeau. 2020-21 Coach of the Year. This was, we just spent the last 10 minutes or whatever making whatever gripes, but no matter what, this was the best Knicks season. I would say, I'm going to go out there and say that I probably enjoyed this season from a basketball perspective even more than 12-13, which maybe makes me a prisoner of the moment because that 12-13 season was really fun, but easily one of the best seasons of the last 25 years. With the Knicks when they've been so bad, I would say easily top two. It's either this or 12-13, and that's a hell of an accomplishment because that season's lived on forever. So congrats to Tibbs winning Coach of the Year. Maybe it won't be his last one. I don't know. Who knows? I guess we'll see. It's probably going to be harder for him to win it again because he's not going to ever have this big of a turnaround with the Knicks again, hopefully, unless maybe next year they turn into a 60-win team. I guess we'll see. That would be pretty cool. But that's it for today. On Locked On Knicks. If you want to go check out the Locked On Today podcast, you can get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with host Peter Bukowski. He'll update you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. That's it for this episode of Locked On Knicks, and we will be back a few more times this week. I'm not even quite sure what we're going to be talking about yet, but we'll find some stuff. And as we said already, be sure to come through for our locker room discussion on Thursday at 5:30 p.m. like we do every week. We'll be on Locker Room with you guys talking. So till next time, peace out. This has been Locked On Knicks.